Hello, hello, and welcome to Season 11, Episode 31 of the Ubuntu Podcast. It is Thursday, the 11th of October. We're recording a little late, and today we're going to discuss what's been happening in the news and the community. We've got no Mark this week because he's got a bit of a bad throat and flu and stuff, and he's at home in bed playing Two Point Hospital, according to Steam. Get well soon, Mark. But that giggle is Martin. Hello, Martin. How are you?
Hello. How are you doing?
Yeah, very good. Thank you. What have you been up to?
Well, a few things, but the most exciting thing is just hours ago, my GPD Pocket 2 arrived all the way from Hong Kong. So I have unboxed my GPD 2 Pocket and turned it on and had about 5 minutes of playtime with it.
Is this the silver-coloured device that has like a nipple mouse and touch screen, that kind of thing?
Well, yes. So that's the GPD Pocket, which I also have. That was its original thing. And this is the version 2. And it doesn't have the track point mouse in the centre of the keyboard anymore. Oh. It now has like the smallest thumb pad in the top right of the body. So you sort of put your thumb on and you move your thumb around. And it's also got a touch screen as well. Like the other one did. So I didn't realize, I thought that was the power button and I was pushing it and nothing was happening. And then when it all came on, I'm a bit slow on the uptake, and then I realized, this is like a track point for your thumb in the top corner. So initial impressions are it's a little bit thinner, a little bit lighter, more powerful CPU, nicer chassis design. It's still all aluminium unibody arrangement. I really like it, and the screen isn't all wonky, but it comes with Windows 10 this time.
When you say the screen isn't all wonky, it boots sideways, doesn't it?
It boots the right way now.
Oh, okay.
This one's normal in that regard.
And is the keyboard like crap, like the one you had before?
The keyboard in terms of the keys are much better, you know, so the tactile response of the keys is much, much improved. It's still like they've taken all the keycaps, thrown them in the air, and left them where they landed on the chassis, right, of the, they're like scattered to the four corners, and I've even got a couple with Chinese lettering on them, so I can't wait to find out what they do.
Oh my gosh.
Yep, but it actually looks quite decent. I shall be having a go at sticking a Linux on it at some point in the near future.
You decided which Linux you're going to put on there?
Need you ask?
Well, I do hear that Plasma is all the rage these days.
I'm seriously thinking of changing Ubuntu Mate to Ubuntu Mate KDE something or other. KDE.
What, to
Mate.
Just like...
just to ride the hype train.
Of course, of course. Yeah, anyway, that's a good idea.
Mm. What have you been up to?
I've also received a new device.
Ooh. Is it a ThinkPad?
No, it's not a ThinkPad. it's not as powerful as your GPD Pocket. It's called a Clockwork Pi.
What's one of those?
And I backed it on Kickstarter about a year ago, almost exactly a year ago, and it arrived a few weeks back. It's a modular ARM-based computer, modular in that it's multiple boards. It's not just one board. There's one processor board, but then there's a separate board that's got speakers on it, another board which is input, and another board is mount the battery on it, and another one for the screen. So you get it as like a kit of parts. They're already soldered, and you get these plastic cases, and you put them all in the cases and put the cases inside the big case. And it kind of looks like a Game Boy, the original OG Game Boy.
Right.
But with a color screen, and you get an SD card with it, and it runs a Linux, and it has their own little custom front end on it. And you can play games. You can do anything on it because it's Linux.
Right.
It's based on Debian.
When you say games, what sort of games?
Mostly games that use up, down, left, right, fire, and a second fire button or three or four buttons. So you could, there are some native games that have been built for Linux, but there's also a bunch of emulators on there.
Right.
It ships with a bunch of emulators and you just lob some games on there. It's quite clever. The user interface on it is a nice little friendly GUI, and you can access it over the Wi-Fi. You can connect it to the Wi-Fi. So it's very easy to get files on and off it because it starts up a little FTP server, so you can connect to it.
FTP.
I think it's FTP. It might have Samba as well or something, but it's super easy to, you can SSH into it as well. So I've been SSHing and I got Prince of Persia on it. So I can play Prince of Persia this little portable device. So it's just brilliant.
You said it's like cases of assembled modules, and then you put those cases inside a larger case. When it's, when it's not in the large case that looks like a Game Boy, is there some utility to having these discrete modules?
Just keeping them secure, I think. There's little wires between them, but you could have it all splayed out on a table. It doesn't have to be inside the case. Like, for example, if you wanted to connect a keyboard or connect a different display to it, or hook it up with some other maker-related stuff or sensors, or you could put it inside a quadcopter or whatever, really. It's basically just an ARM SoC, but it's been tailored specifically it's designed partly for gaming, but partly for education, because they want people to write software for it, like everyone who has a platform wants to.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, the idea is that it's educational, so you could write software in rather easier to use languages. It's not like you would necessarily write stuff, hardcore stuff, in C++, or you might use Love2D, for example, and write stuff in Lua. It might be a nice little introductory device for writing games that you can play on a portable device. It's nice. Really cool. I really like it. And it's got a battery in it and it's rechargeable.
How long does it last on the battery? Do you know?
Some hours. I haven't actually run it down. I tend to plug it in again every so often. But but because it's got a micro USB thing, I could just plug it into a battery to top it up. So,
all right. So it runs and runs then.
Yeah, it's pretty good. So I'll report more on this once I play with it a little bit more.
Excellent.
Should we get on with it?
Yeah, we got a couple of other little announcements, haven't we?
Oh, yeah.
Fediverse lovers, rejoice. Ubuntu Podcast is back on Mastodon. We've had an account there for a while. You can find us on octodon.social and we're at Ubuntu Podcast. So, we're posting all of our stuff there if you want to follow us in the Fediverse.
And we're also on Spotify.
Woohoo!
That's
been a long time coming.
Yeah, Mark discovered that they're accepting podcast submissions now. So he submitted the podcast and it's now on there. So you can listen to us on Spotify, which is awesome.
Is this why Mark's got a week off? Because he's made a significant contribution to the podcast by getting us.
I think he's listening to all our back catalogue. That's what it is on Spotify, because that's possible as well.
Yes. Oh, yes, true.
Right, let's get on with it. So now we've got some news. And first up in the news is something very close to my heart. Plex is now available as a snap in the Snap Store.
Wow.
I slipped this one in while Mark's not here. because this is something I worked on. And
You did.
Along with a bunch of other people at Canonical and people at Plex. And so for those people who don't know, Plex is a piece of software. It's really popular for serving media. And we worked with the Plex developers to put Plex in the Snap Store so people can very easily just snap install Plex Media Server and get it on their home server or on an old laptop or whatever, wherever they want to host their own media. And that launched today as we speak. That went in the store.
Just hours ago.
Yeah. 3 o'clock this afternoon.
Yeah.
The embargo lifted. Yeah.
I've been a Plex user for years and years, so I'm delighted to see this get into the store. I also learned, so I've just been using Plex the way I've been using it for years and years, which has got our music, our films in it, and it's got our home videos and our home photos in it, and we just access that through the Rokus using the Plex front end on the Rokus. But when I read the release notes for this, I found out that Plex at some point in the last few years have added DVB support, so you can actually use it as a PVR and the, you know, a live TV front end.
Yeah, there's a whole ton of stuff in there that I never knew existed. I honestly thought it was just for media, like for video, you know. You've downloaded some video or you've ripped some video off of DVD or whatever and you want to serve it up on your network, but actually there's more to it than that, and that's brilliant because now it's really super easy to install.
Yeah,
it's in the beta channel in the store because it is a beta release of Plex, and when the next stable release goes out, I think it'll go into the stable channel, so it'll be just snap install Plex Media Server. But as we write this, it's in beta channel, and there's already been a couple of updates pushed to the store, so anyone who installs it will get those updates over the air, which is good.
And if you're interested, Plex can be uplifted with Plex Pass, which unlocks some additional features, and guys at Plex were kind enough to give us a special code, which is Plex Pass Plex-snap. So if you install the Snap, you can get 30 days of Plex Pass access to try out all of the goodness and see if there's anything there that you like.
Yeah, sweet. Cool. What's next?
Microsoft have joined the Open Invention Network.
What?
And more specifically, donated a ton of patents that Microsoft hold to the Open Invention Network. So for those of you not familiar, the Open Invention Network, or the OIN, is an open source patent consortium. So they hold patent licenses and that are available royalty free to anyone who wants to join the OIN community. And before Microsoft joined, the OIN had about 2,500 members, and they had about 1,300 patents. And Microsoft have waltzed in and landed another 60,000 patents into the OIN, which is astonishing. I think Keith Berglet, the OIN CEO, said, "This is everything Microsoft has, and it covers everything related to their older open source technologies, such as Android and the Linux kernel and OpenStack, and newer technologies such as LF Energy." I'm not sure what that is. Low frequency, maybe?
No idea.
And Hyperledger and their predecessors and successor versions. This is a significant contribution that Microsoft have made here, right? This is probably bigger than anything else that we've spoken about in recent years about Microsoft's commitment to open source.
You know, whenever we mention one of these like little tidbits of, you know, oh, they've made a text editor, Visual Studio, or they've contributed to the Linux kernel in the terms of like Hyper-V support or whatever.
They contributed to XRDP in order to land Ubuntu in the Hyper-V gallery.
Right. And all these little things, there's plenty of people out there who are saying, well, you know, Microsoft haven't changed, have they? They're still evil. I think this knocks that on the head. Like, the old Microsoft would just not have done this. This is just a complete change. And I realize that there are people shouting at their podcast players thinking, oh, they're just Microsoft shills. And, you know, if you'd met me 10 years ago, you would have known that I'm not the biggest fan of Microsoft. I certainly wasn't back then. Someone, a recruiter, tried to get me to join Microsoft, and I laughed in her face, basically. I was like, what makes you think I would want to work for them? Like, so I believe that they have changed. And yeah, maybe I'm being naive, maybe I'm being daft, but I think it is possible. The leadership has changed. Yeah. They're clearly doing things they would never have done before. This is
such massive. A statement. Yes, it is. I mean, I know a lot of people have been critical of Microsoft earning several billion dollars a year off royalties from patents in Android. And of course, all this is going to come to an end now. Scott Guthrie, who's Microsoft's executive vice president of cloud and enterprise, said, "We want to protect open source projects from IP lawsuits. So we're opening our patent portfolio to the OIN." And as I mentioned earlier, Android patents are included in these patents that are now part of the OIN.
Am I right in saying that any member of OIN cannot use patents against any other member of OIN? That's how it works, isn't it?
That's how it works.
Right. And now they've come along with their big bundle of patents.
Yeah.
They're basically making a commitment to say, we're not going to use these patents against any of you other thousand plus.
I anticipate the OIN community membership is going to skyrocket.
Yeah. Well, that's a bit of good news, isn't it?
It is.
In other good news, Minecraft developers have open sourced some of the code from the game.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah, this is interesting. It's not the whole game. It's not, you know, the entire platform, but it's a little bit. And they're making some of the libraries that are part of Minecraft open source. And as with all developers these days, they've chucked that code on GitHub and you can grab the code. I think the first part they've open sourced is a thing called Brigadier. That's their first library, which is the command engine that Minecraft uses. So it's a way for you to interact with the game by feeding it, commands. So you can, have things happen when you when the user types certain commands, like, you know, give this to that person, and then mm-hmm. you can have some code hook into that and do something with that, which is quite cool. Because Minecraft is used by a lot of young people, and, you know, getting them to the point where they can modify the game. You know, it's the kind of thing people used to do a long time ago. It's like you'd type in a game from a magazine or you'd look at a listing and you'd hack away at it and try and change it and improve it. And making this stuff open makes it more possible. I mean, there are already lots of mods for Minecraft, but opening the code up is a different level. Mm-hmm. I'm interested to know how much more they're going to open, because there was a commitment made which was quickly forgotten by Notch back in the early days of Minecraft, that he said he would open source it and never did. And some people have long memories and remember that.
No, the blog post where they announced these initial libraries being released under the MIT license does suggest that this is just the first, you know, libraries that they're opening up, and more will follow. But I imagine these must be pretty robust, because Minecraft as a game is very well battle tested by now.
Yes. Although, you know, some would argue Minecraft is old hat now. Nobody plays Minecraft. They all moved on to Fortnite, and even then they've moved on from that to other things as well. So maybe this will get some people back on it.
Perhaps.
What's next, Martin?
Well, Google have been on another killing spree.
Oh, really?
Hot off the heels of issuing sunsetting of Google Inbox. Google Plus is now been announced as being closed down. So I think we've got about 10 months until Google Plus goes away.
Oh, so it's not quite closed down. But
not quite closed
down. It's on the death spiral.
Yes, it is. Yeah. I would have cared about this a couple of years ago, but I've kind of fallen out of love with Google Plus in the last couple of years. What about you? I mean, do you feel this is...
It was tab worthy some while ago. I would have a pinned tab for the things I use, like email and my calendar and Twitter and stuff like that. And there would be a tab. But a few months ago, I just closed that tab and just never bothered opening it again.
Yeah.
And it's really sad because it used to be really vibrant, and I really enjoyed the fact that there was a bunch of technical people on there. And that's part of the problem, because it never really had a mainstream audience at all. And they made some missteps when they tried to integrate it with YouTube and force it on everyone.
Yeah.
People rejected that, and their real name policy, they screwed up a little bit as well. So they've made some missteps, but then every social network has. No social network is perfect, but unfortunately Google Plus never really took off among the normal populace.
I used to live in Google Plus. It was like the only place I was active online for years. I used to love it, because most of the open source nerds and projects and, you know, interesting people were there. And it was like our own little social network just for us.
Mm.
But the thing that really that drove me away is I've tried to automate a lot of things to make my online life as streamlined as possible. And that's using things like If This Then That to automate, you know, actions and posts and what have you. And none of that exists for Google Plus. And in the places where it does exist, in things like Buffer, I can't take advantage of it because I have a Google Suite account and that's not supported. And it was just so frustrating. And I think because I couldn't integrate with it, I just couldn't be bothered with it anymore. And I've definitely noticed a drop off in the commentary in Google Plus certainly the last year, since there was a big blow up of interest in Mastodon about a year ago, and lots of people have created accounts over there. I think we can attribute the dwindling of Google Plus for sort of the open source community because they've gone to Google Plus, to Mastodon.
I think in some ways, yes, but I think also it doesn't help that Google Plus wasn't being developed as a platform, and that was obvious from the amount of spam that arrived.
Yeah, totally.
You know, it was just relentless. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're following any kind of leading figure or leading news organization, as soon as they post an article, there was just spam underneath it straight away, and it was just... Yeah, I don't want to go there if there's just like loads of nakeds underneath an article, a news article. I just don't I don't want that. So I'll just close the tab.
There is more spam in the spam trap of the Ubuntu Mate community on Google Plus than there are posts made to the community by legitimate people.
Yeah.
And I used to be really reserved about, you know, bringing down the ban hammer on people that do that stuff. But in the last 18 months, anyone posts obvious spam, I just instantly banned the account because that was the only recourse to stop
right.
it.
Oh, but I did the same. I did the same with the Ubuntu community on Google Plus. It got to the point where people were sharing like how-to guides, but these are like really poor quality and just like not quality content, not specifically aimed at Ubuntu. So we just banned them. And because there are so many people with so many accounts, you can just continue banning them all day, every day. And you would, it was like whack-a-mole. You'd never get rid of them all. It was really relentless. Anyway, we've all moved on.
Yeah.
We've said our goodbyes to Google Plus.
It was fun while it lasted.
Yeah.
Everyone come to Mastodon.
Finally, one small piece of security news. Tom Ormiston pointed out in our Telegram channel that there's an issue with the Etcher application, which is a popular piece of software for writing ISOs to USB keys. And he discovered when running a piece of firewall software that snoops the connections, he saw that even with the privacy settings turned on in Etcher to tell it not to reach out to the internet and report analytics and statistics, it was still doing that. Mm. I thought this was interesting because it's been reported on the upstream bug tracker with screenshots and supporting data. But as we record this 5 days later, there have been no replies, no acknowledgement from the upstream developers at Resin that this is actually a problem.
Mm.
It looks like the issue is probably one of the various JavaScript modules that are used in this Electron application is reporting back statistics of usage.
I was going to say, you know, there's loads of NPM modules. Goodness knows what they might be trying to reach out and touch and tinker with. And it could just be that.
They are mostly analytics and they may well be honoring their own statistics, but you can't have a switch that says, I'm not going to send statistics and then it Fair do point. That. You know,
yeah.
It should do it, but we'll keep an eye on that. It's quite interesting. And that's the end of the news. And now it's time for some community news. What's first, Martin?
Well, good news. The Mate Wayland port is moving along. I was surprised to see this turn up on Pharonix. And then I saw that they were citing some news from the Ubuntu discourse where William Wolfe has been talking about some of the work he's been doing. The first pull requests have indeed been submitted to the Mate project that add the initial WL roots and Wayland support. So core Mate team are now in discussion with William about how best we merge this stuff and how we progress into the future.
Mm.
So this isn't everything you need all in one go. We're taking an approach of it'll be iterative and everything's hidden behind, you know, build time options and compile macros and things. So,
all right. So you're not going to surprise users with this no longer works because we've added Wayland support.
And we've some experience of this because when we made the transition from GTK 2 to GTK 3 for many years, you could choose to support either when you built, you know, all of the tools, and this will be a similar process, you know, continue to support X and Wayland as, you know, the Wayland implementation improves. But I anticipate we're a long way away from Wayland being a thing with Mate, so let's not get too excited just yet. It's early days, but exciting nonetheless.
Okay, I will try to keep my excitement down and save it up for our next item of news, which is KDE Neon is now based on Ubuntu 18.04, the Bionic Beaver.
Wow.
So KDE Neon, the most popular Linux distribution within a small subset of the internet. KDE Neon was based on 16.04 and was pretty popular and has been getting quite a lot of buzz recently. They've recently rebased on 18.04. So images you download now are based on the newest LTS of Ubuntu. So they've got that stable framework and then built on top of that, they build all the KDE apps and the Plasma desktop. So if you want to try that out, you can either upgrade and by now, if you're on 16.04, you probably would have been poked in the face with a little orange icon that told you to upgrade. And I'm told by the KDE guys that they're going to add an additional little pop-up to remind you that 16.04 goes out of support within a certain period of time. I don't know when that time is.
Interesting.
To remind you.
They're choosing not to support the 16.04-based version of KDE Neon for the lifespan of Ubuntu 16.04.
No, they never committed to a support window. They just put it out there and never said how long it would be, yeah. Which was pretty clever. So what they're going to do is put a thing in the distro, I believe, that tells you know, this is when it's going to end support. You should upgrade.
I think that's really wise. I'll explain why, because people listening to this will probably wonder, well, you know, Ubuntu's an LTS and it lasts 5 years. Why wouldn't you just, you know, ride that? Lots of other distros that are based on the LTS versions of Ubuntu claim they're LTSs. But unless you're actually building on Ubuntu, the LTS version, and supporting your stuff for the same life period, then it really isn't an LTS. And there are lots of these distributions that have LTS and claim they're supported for the full 5 years. But the next time the LTS comes out, 2 years later, they drop the old one like a hot rock. But users are left to believe that they've got this 5 year supported thing.
Yeah.
So I think it's very classy what KDE Neon have done here.
Yeah. It's really good. And you can get the ISO. If you want to do a clean install, you can get the ISO and do that as well. So that's good news. What's next?
Well, more good news. Ubuntu 18.10 beta is out and now available to download, and for all of the flavors as well.
Ooh, golly, that release is coming very, it's next week, isn't it?
Goodness. Yes, it is next week. As we record this, it's a week away. Yeah. Oh, crikey, I better get a hustle on. I've got a couple of fixes I need to land. So yes, Ubuntu and all the flavors.
So everyone is participating in the beta, is it?
Yes. So unlike previous cycles where the flavors had a couple of alphas and a couple of beta releases, we've all aligned behind the idea of a single final beta release, the same way that Ubuntu has been doing it for some years now. Mm. And we have the beta release and then 3 weeks later, the final release.
Awesome. And that's the end of the community news. We've got a couple of events. The first one came from Gilgwath on Telegram. And it's the CCC, the 35th CCC, which is the Chaos Communication Congress. And that runs from the 27th to the 30th of December in Leipzig, Germany. It's strictly not strictly speaking a Linux event, but in general, it's an open source free culture event. Mm-hmm. And it always has its fair share of that. There's lots of details out now, as always. But there's also a call for papers. So if you're interested in giving a talk, we'll have the link in the show notes. It's always one of those things I've always wanted to go to, but that period between the 27th and the 30th of December, I generally find I'm comatose.
Yeah.
Full of turkey and beer. And port and cheese.
Because of when it is, I've never been. It's usually this time of year, thereabouts. I'd love to go, but also it's the only conference that I tend to watch like the videos from, because it's that time of year and I've got time on my hands to actually indulge myself.
Very true. I've found myself surfing YouTube for the CCC videos before now. Yeah. They're very well produced as well.
Yeah.
So good audio, and you get switched to the slides and all that kind of stuff. It's usually very good. So if you can't go, then check out the videos on YouTube.
Absolutely.
And there's another conference as well.
Yes, there's the Covalence Conference. There's the Covalence Conference, which is an independent, handcrafted, single-day, single-track conference about building desktop applications with Electron, Node.js, and JavaScript. And that's taking place on January the 16th at the Slack headquarters in San Francisco.
Mm.
I believe one of us is going to be lucky enough to attend that.
Yes, one of us might be going to that. Yes. I don't have a flight booked yet, but
no, neither do I. Well, I do have a flight booked, but it's not to San Francisco, so I think that means you're going to be going.
Drat. Yeah, looking forward to that. We're supporting that at work. We're supporting this this conference, so you'll find our logo down the bottom of the page, which is one of the reasons why we're mentioning it, and also because we're going, and because it should be interesting, because
it's the first of its kind.
Electron is all the hotness at the moment. So, it's good to go along and learn a bit about the internals of how it works and hear from developers who are using it. I think that's all of the events for this week.
We know you've got a Facebook account, so stop sharing cat photos for a moment and like or share our posts so your friends and family can find the Ubuntu podcast.
Oh, dear me. It's very different without Mark, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not the same. I don't like it.
No, I miss his gravelly voice and his hair.
Yeah, I miss his editorial skills when we're putting the show notes together as well.
Ah, dear. So that's the end of episode 31. We'll be back next week when we're going to discuss the release of Elementary 5, Juno, with Daniel Foray from the Elementary Project. And we'll also bring you some Android love. Looking forward to that. We will see you next time on release day, probably Ubuntu release day.
Oh yeah.
See you then.